Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I think that having the conception of faith that I have now and the practice of faith that I have now, I think it is uniquely mine. And I don't think that I would be doing something more correctly if I gave up one for the other.
This is Podvocative.
Hello, welcome back to episode 10. We're on 10 now. We're officially double digits here at Podvocative. Thank you all for being patient with us as we took time off that we needed. Thanks for allowing us the space to reflect, and we're excited to be back with another episode.
So this week we ask our guest what her favorite scent is, and I would love to chime in because I know our guest has very strong opinions against a scent that she said, and that's actually my favorite. I love lavender. I love lavender ice cream, lavender candles. The color lavender, too, I think is one of my favorites. So
I would agree. I think you maybe took mine. Lavender is like kind of basic, but I love it. Like, I'm just so surprised there's a hatred for it. Lavender is delicious, but I think any like flowery scent I'm into, like rose, jasmine, gardenia, I don't know, anything. I'm listing off the things that are in my deodorants.
Yeah, so speaking of Raisa, we're so excited to have had the chance to speak with her. She has such incredible and unique story. She grew up in a multi-faith household with her mother being Ismaili and her father being Maharashtrian Hindu. And so she shares her experience of what that was like growing up and how that shaped her beliefs now as a young adult and figuring out what organized religion means to her, and then how she wants to carry that in the future.
Yeah, exactly. It's a super interesting story. We won't give it away, but we loved speaking with her about her family and the way that she grew up. And, you know, Raisa grew up in India and then recently moved to the States. So kind of comparing the cultures there as well as within the two religions that she actively partakes in. So with that being said, we're so excited to dive in and we'll catch you on the other side.
Thank you for joining us. I want to start by telling us who you are, what you do, where you're from, and then also what your favorite scent is.
So my name is Raisa. I work as a business analyst at a consulting company in Boston. I was born and raised in Mumbai. I moved to the U.S. at the same time that I started college when I was 18. I went to NYU for a year and then I transferred to Wellesley in Boston. My family moved with me to the U.S. at the same time. So I have been here about 6 years now. My favorite scent is rose. It's definitely my go-to. I like it as a flavor. I like it as a scent. You just can't go wrong. I do feel passionately about disliking lavender.
Cool. So do you want to give our listeners a little bit of background on why you're here and, you know, the story that you're going to tell us today?
My mom is an Ismaili Muslim and my dad is a Maharashtrian Hindu. I was raised as both Hindu and Ismaili Muslim by them my entire life. So I'm here to talk generally to my experience of being raised in an interfaith family and growing up being fully immersed into both cultures as an Ismaili and then also as a Maharashtrian Hindu. When you're the one person speaking to a topic, you are a representative for a group much bigger than yourself, and then you have the sweats for talking for many more people than yourself when you've only really lived your life and not anyone else's. I definitely have rep sweats right now. So yes, disclaimer that this is my very specific experience as being raised both Maharashtrian Hindu and Ismaili Muslim.
Can you share with us how you identify now in terms of religion, and has that evolved over time? Have you felt more comfortable claiming one identity over the other?
I identify as Hindu Muslim. Growing up, I definitely did not identify in the same way or was not at peace with this identity in the same way. Being Muslim should like part of a discriminated against and sort of persecuted group in India, or at least at the very least a minority. If I didn't want to have a conversation about being dual religion, I would take the easier route of saying I was Hindu or marking I was Hindu on a form, which I would not do now. I would raise my eyebrows if someone asked me my religion on a form right now.
What does organized religion mean to you, and what parts of it do you value and cherish?
Now, religion I think is most important to me as a source of faith and being able to find hope in times of difficulty. Secondly, religion can be a really important aspect of community. There are many ways to find community, and if you were to say that religion is not necessary for people to feel like they belong in a community, I would agree, but I feel like religion facilitates community building in a really specific and special way. And that is hard to recreate in other groups. Like, I went to a women's college, and I think we have a really strong community, but that's very different. It doesn't come at all close, I think, in magnitude to what it is like to be an Ismaili.
Can you give us a little background on how your parents met and how they decided to come together and to start a family?
Yeah, so they met because they were both involved in theater circles in college. So my dad is a playwright and my mom was an actress. So they met in theater circles, and my mom has definitely acted in multiple plays that my dad wrote and directed. So that's how they met. There is a legend that my dad says, and that my mom has since confirmed, that the first time he like saw her in a play or heard her voice, he was like, oh, who's that girl? And someone told him my mom's name, and they were like, oh, her name is Manira. And he was like, oh no, that's hard. So that's a Muslim name. Because apparently he like knew the first time that he was interested. So they met through those circles. They dated 10 years before they got married, I think in no small part because it was definitely difficult to sort of get acceptance from their parents. And I don't think their parents were fully on board, or at least my mom's parents were not fully on board when they got married. But then they definitely came around over the years, and things have been totally fine since. But I think it was a uphill battle.
Very cool. So how do they reconcile any religious or cultural differences within their marriage that may come up?
Part of what helped is that they dated for a really, really long time before they got married. So my mom was pretty close with my dad's family before they got married. She knew all of them. She spoke Marathi, which was a big plus. Like, there was never a language barrier. And my dad can't speak Gujarati, but he can speak Hindi and he can understand Gujarati. So I think they could still understand each other's families, which was a big help, I think, in this. I think they started at a very fundamental understanding that they both believed in God. They both prayed. They were both God-believing. It didn't matter how they prayed. It would be harder if one of them was really religious and religion mattered a lot to them, and for the other person, if it didn't matter at all. They wanted faith to be a part of their kids' lives, and that they both believed in God. I think that helped a lot.
Is there ever a conversation between them, either before or after you guys were born, surrounding how they would raise you or if one of them would convert?
Yeah, so they were both definitely super clear that neither of them would convert to the other person's religion, and they respected that, and there was never a conversation about either person converting.
Do you want to tell us a little bit about how was faith presented to you when you were younger?
It was decided that they would both raise their kids in their specific faiths. They decided that they would give one of their kids a Hindu name and one of their kids a Muslim name. So my brother is called Ritwik, which means knower of the Vedas, and my name is Raisa, which means leader in Farsi/Arabic. In terms of practicing, so I grew up going to Jamaat, saying dua every single day at home. I would like to say that my dad knows. He doesn't know all of the dua, but from like sitting with us, like when we said it growing up, like if you started a verse, like maybe he would continue the next like four sentences from having heard it so many times. Going to Jamaat on Fridays, I was guide, a volunteer in Jamaat Kana, which I really enjoyed doing. I went to Step Camp or to REC. I got Varo for Golden Jubilee, which is very exciting. So I think in many ways I was fully immersed in the culture. I think a special thing that my mom and I used to do was, I think morning Jamaat Kana was really important to my mom, and she would take me to morning Kani when I was really young. I think it's meant a lot for her to be able to have the space of Jamaat Kana and have faith to turn to when there were hardships in her life. And I think it was really important to her to instill that same faith in me. On the Hindu side, growing up in India, I think you were so immersed in Hinduism because it is a majority Hindu country. I had less headspace devoted to thinking about being Hindu, and I, in general, thought more about being Ismaili. I think if an analog would be thinking about someone who had a white parent and a parent of color, it would be a greater part of their identity to think about their parent that was Indian or Chinese or Iranian, because it's just, I guess, the norm is to be white. And if you were, whatever part of your identity is different from that is something that you would think about more. So in that sense, being Hindu was the norm. So I thought about that less. Everyone celebrated the festivals. Most of my friends are Hindu. Like, you would get entire 3 weeks off for Diwali every year. We would watch Mahabharat on TV every Sunday when I was really young. So in that sense, I learned to be Hindu from many more things than just my dad. But I think my mom solely taught me to be Ismaili, or what it meant to be Ismaili for her.
In terms of practicing, did one religion take more intentionality, more time? What were some of the differences that you noticed?
Being Ismaili was more, in my experience, more of an intentional practice, and in that you were expected to live and practice your faith every single day, which is not something that I felt in my dad's family or being raised Hindu in general. Like, definitely there is puja, and religious Hindus would pray more often and practice their faith more religiously and regularly and make it a bigger part of their lives. But I think in general, the average Ismaili had a greater awareness of their faith and the role of their faith in their lives than the average Hindu person that I met.
Religious schooling and religious education is a big part of any religion. So can you tell us a little bit about what that education and schooling looked like for you?
So I attended REC. REC was fairly far away. I think logistically it didn't work out when I was much younger, but I think 7th grade onward, I started condensing a STEP/REC into a few week camps where kids could go on the weekends and cover more of the material at once. Generally for me, I learned much more about being Ismaili and practicing that faith from my mom than I ever did from REC, even though I had a few STEP teachers that were really memorable. There was not an equivalent of like a Sunday school or REC on the Hindu side. Actually, growing up, I don't think any of my Hindu friends had similar religious schooling. I think it was mostly their parents and grandparents that taught them.
Did you feel like there was space for you socially within the Ismaili community?
I always felt that there was a space for me in the faith, and there was a space for me to practice being Ismaili, but I didn't always feel that there was a space for me in Jamaat Kana, like with specifically kids my age. Generally, like people my mom's age, like knew that my mom was married to a non-Ismaili person. I think it was like not a secret. My mom was definitely not trying to hide it, but I think kids my age sort of like didn't fully understand it. I never fully felt that there was a place for me with the other kids my age in Jamaat Kana.
Do you think that there was something to do with your dual faith identity?
I think looking back, yeah, definitely, possibly, like that was part of it. But I think it was also the sort of thing where I never made close enough relationships to understand what it was specifically that made me feel like I didn't want to spend that much time with kids my age in IC.
To follow up on that, like, did you feel similarly, like, at your Hindu place of worship, like, that you also maybe didn't have a place there, or did you feel more comfortable there?
No, I never felt uncomfortable in a temple, but I think that's also because it's not guarded in any way. Anyone can go to the temple. If you are a parent in an interfaith marriage, it's maybe easier to be in a faith that you don't have to be baptized into it, and the place of worship is not walled open. And then I think the other part of it is that there isn't a closed community, like, in the same way. So there are people that will go to a temple that's near their house often, and they'll frequent it, but it's not the same as Jamaat Kana, where there is prayer at a fixed time every single day and people congregate on the same days and there is a community built around it. So I think the social dynamic is very different.
Can you go a little deeper into how the communities differ that you've seen? What were some of the highlighting differences that you could pinpoint now looking back?
The sense of community that you have as an Ismaili is definitely unparalleled in terms of like anything that you could get as being a Hindu Maharashtrian person. Maybe there are specific communities of Hindu people following a certain god or in a certain region that have a similar sense of community, but in my experience from my dad, as well as watching my Hindu friends growing up, I definitely didn't think that there was a parallel. Anecdotally, I remember I was watching Incredibles 2 with my cousins, and we waited for the credits at the end, and we saw a name, and we were like, wait, this person sounds Ismaili, and we looked them up, and they were Ismaili, and we were like, whoa, it's so cool that there was an Ismaili that worked on Incredibles 2. If you think about it, it's like, wait, I never met this person. I didn't know their name until I saw it on the screen, but suddenly I feel a connection to them, and I feel like he's like one of us, right? I think that in a very like pure sense is what community means, or an aspect of what community looks like. I think that is very special.
You and your brother, obviously you guys were raised very similarly. Do you guys have similar beliefs?
I would think so. I think we're both at this stage in our lives where we're trying to figure out, I think as a lot of starting their careers out of college, people are trying to figure out how they want to practice their faith, what organized religion means to them and how it sits in their life and what parts of it they want to continue to practice and make permanent in their lives and what parts of it they want to do differently. I think we're both in the process of figuring that out, but I think we have the same sensibility. And I think if you were to ask him what was important to him about religion, I think it's...
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The answer will be similar to mine.
You brought up a great point of now that we're young adults, we are kind of figuring out where we fit into organized religion. I want to know your perspective on what you think about organized religion versus spirituality, and has that changed over time?
Yeah, I think I definitely had a rebel phase where I was like, organized religion is just not for me. I can't go to Jamaica. Like, I can't, like, I don't want to go to temples or mosques or whatever. Like, it's fine. Like, I believe in God. Like, God knows I believe in God. Like, I don't need to perform these things to show other people that I believe in God. I'm not into this. But I think over time, I think I'm now at the point where I see the value in having a structure to be able to live out those beliefs. I think having a physical space to be able to have your moment of peace or your connection or your community, I think I'm much more bought in on the value of those concrete aspects of organized religion to be able to practice the spirituality or the faith that you have.
Why do you think people right now are afraid to pursue interfaith relationships? What do you think the hesitation is around that?
So I personally, I'm going to try to capture what I think my parents' experience with this was, because I, being based in an interfaith family, I don't feel restricted that don't feel like my partner has to be of a specific faith. I just have resigned or made peace with the fact that no one else is going to have an upbringing similar to mine. But I think the hesitation is someone with fundamentally different values than you, or the discomfort of your day-to-day life and your way of living being different or sticking out. I think I know for my mom, being raised Ismaili, marrying a Hindu person, I think her hesitation would be around, she would not be able to celebrate Navroz or Kashali in the same way, like with her entire family. Like, it would be an experience that would be limited to just her and her children. Then I think also just, I think if you have a dominant image of what a family is like, where both people grew up with very similar experiences and upbringing, and you feel like that you have a sense of coherence, it's hard to imagine that it can work with two people that were raised very differently or have just different fundamental tenets.
Is it more that you feel more like spiritually connected actually to both, or is it kind of that those are the traditions that you grew up with, so now it's kind of like a comfortable thing that is also sort of part of your identity and then part of your parents' identity, or maybe like your loyalty to your parents' identity?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think it's hard to fully disentangle those things, but I will say it is an intentional choice to want to be part of both communities and practice both faiths. And I think part of why I make this choice every day is because of the way that it is entwined with culture and with practices that I grew up with. For instance, I think there's a common practice in both religions for remembering the deceased members of your family after they've passed away, whether you have nikshat, when in Hindu families, or that you do like dua for Baha'i members of your family. I think like there is a similar practice of remembering the deceased members of your family after they've passed. And I think that there is something to be said that you have a more meaningful life knowing that you'll be remembered after you pass and that it matters how you'll be remembered after you pass. I think so part of it, yes, definitely is that I can't disentangle it from culture and I don't want to disavow parts of the culture that I was raised with. And I can't imagine practicing just one religion. Maybe this is a short-sighted view, but I can't imagine practicing only one of these religions and then continuing to culturally identify with the other. I also don't think that I would be less of an Ismaili, or I would be more of an Ismaili if I was just an Ismaili and not practicing Hinduism, or I would be more of a Hinduism if I was, or more of a Hindu if I was not practicing Ismailism. I think having said that, I never felt the need to switch. And I think that having the conception of faith that I have now and the practice of faith that I have now, I think it is uniquely mine. And I don't think that I would be doing something more correctly if I gave up one for the other.
So I know you said growing up, you really had a good time going to Jamaat Khana with your mom, specifically morning Jamaat Khana, and then also being a part of some Hindu ceremonies. Did you ever find that it was a way for you to bond with your parents individually and like kind of strengthen that bond as a child? And did that ever incentivize you, like when you were a kid, oh, I want to go because I want to spend time with my mom, not necessarily entirely because of the religious aspect?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think, yeah, definitely. I think religion was a way to spend time with them. So like going to Jamaat Khana with my mom in the morning, like going to the temple with my dad. And then also I think Hindu festivals, a Ganesh festival is really big for Maharashtrians in Mumbai. And I spent a lot of time with my dad and then also with my dad's like sister and my extended family on my dad's side, like celebrating that festival. And yeah, and I think that a lot of familial bonding comes from celebrating religious festivals together and practicing religion. So yes, I think it was definitely a way of like, yes, I was excited about Ganesh festival and about puja, but I was also excited that I would get to spend all that time with my cousins and my aunt.
I'm curious, how did the wedding of your parents work? Did they do both ceremonies?
Oh yes, excellent question. It was in a court. They both signed a piece of paper and they were married. There was no Hindu ceremony. There was no Muslim ceremony. There was just the court. It was very, I think, ahead of its time.
Have you seen the Ismaili faith evolve in its acceptance towards interfaith families? And has that differed from when you grew up in India versus now what you've seen in the US?
Yeah, that's a good question. I would say yes. Like, I think over, like, even, like, growing up when I was younger through when I went to high school, like, even in India, I think there was at least somewhat more acceptance. And I saw more people get married to people outside of the Ismaili community. I think in the U.S., I don't have a gauge or a baseline of what it was like longer ago. But at least since I've moved here, I saw significantly more interfaith couples than I ever saw in India. I don't think I knew any other interfaith person in my Jamaat Khana or in like, growing up in any like camps or anything in India, I think. But moving to the U.S., there were like two or three other, I think, interfaith families like in the Jamaat Khanas that I attended. So definitely more common here.
Yeah. So I like that obviously there's more in number, but in terms of acceptance, do you think that the Ismaili faith, from your experience, has created space for interfaith families to be involved? So say for special occasions, if you, your mom, and your brother are going to attend some sort of Kushali or something, is there space for your father to also join in?
Yeah, definitely. I think there is definitely spaces in terms of social events that is like made for non-Ismaili spouses, like especially in the U.S. I think in India, that was such a small share that people never thought to actively mention it. But I think if there are Jamaati programs and things like that, they'll make a note to mention, you know, non-Ismaili spouses are welcome. I think it was special that in Didar, also that they have a section outside for non-Ismaili spouses to also see and meet with Hazimam, which is very interesting that it's a different experience and different process. But the fact that the mom would also want to meet the non-Ismaili spouses, I think, says quite a lot about acceptance.
That's so sweet. I had no idea. That's amazing.
I didn't know.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's definitely a thing.
Very cool. So does your dad like actively partake in the events that he's like allowed to go to?
Yeah, so he's quite a bit of time in India, so he's not around a lot of the time, but when he is, yeah.
So this is kind of a tactical question. Obviously, the two religions have different dietary restrictions and dietary needs. How does that work in your house in terms of grocery shopping or when you want to eat out, or is that something that's not really considered?
Oh, yeah. Excellent question. So we don't eat pork because my mom is not cool with it. So we were raised like not eating pork, but we eat beef because my dad is quite chill. My mom was also strict about my dad not eating pork, which looking back, I'm like, what the hell, mom? Do what he wants. But I think they got married on the premise that he would not eat pork. So I think so his entire time being married, he has not eaten pork. And then we never really brought beef at home. I think my mom felt uncomfortable about doing it, being considerate of my dad. Yeah, generally we don't eat pork, we eat beef.
So what are some questions that you commonly receive about your religious identity? Is it confusing for people?
That's a good question. I feel like I don't get that many questions like after moving to the US. I think maybe people assume that you're Hindu if you're brown, because there are not that many Indian Muslims that have immigrated to the US, which is problematic. In India, I got more questions about it. I actually went to the Aga Khan Academy for 11th and 12th grade, and so my grade was like split 50% Ismaili and 50% non-Ismaili. And I think the non-Ismaili people had questions for me and what it was like, because I was kind of like them, but also I had to experience that all the other kids in the class had. I don't think I felt like I needed to defend myself for being both religions. I think the hard parts of being Ismaili was when I think people didn't realize that there were sort of like microaggressions that they would make, knowing that I was also Hindu and maybe assuming that I was fine with it. Things like, oh, like one of my friend's mom was like, oh, like all the Pakistani people, like I can't believe they were like part of India, which is a very confusing thing to say. They were like, oh yeah, they should, like it should never have been there. And then my friend whose mom said this was like, wait, mom, but like Raisa's mom is Muslim, or like she said Raisa's mom like it, and like looked at her like that, and she was like, no, Raisa's mom is Gujarati. And I was like, while true, she is also Muslim, like, yeah. So things like that where I'm like, and then things I think sort of where I think in India, the people that did know of Ismaili sort of thought of Ismailis as this like model Muslim community, different from the other Muslims that were like quote unquote like bad Muslims. Like definitely very problematic narrative. Like I had a teacher say, oh yes, like the Akhani Muslims are the good Muslims. They like educate their girls and they are progressive in their thinking. Yeah, I'm uncomfortable with the premise of me being part of the good Muslims, implying that there are bad Muslims that I'm not.
Have you thought about how you would raise your children or practice your religions in your future home, regardless of whatever faith your spouse may be?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think I would definitely, this is the unsatisfying answer, but I would definitely be open to raising them Ismaili. It is valuable to be raised in this faith. Similarly with being raised Hindu, I think it's valuable to have that exposure too. I mentioned Ismaili first because that involves a more conscious decision-making process and baptism, whereas I think like raising a kid Hindu, I think is a less official process.
Yeah. So just lastly, to wrap things up, we want to open the floor to you. Is there anything that we didn't ask here that we could have, or is there anything that you want the listeners to know about your story?
Yeah, thank you. I think if you are to hold yourself responsible for raising your kids in a certain faith, I think it is important not to prioritize the script or the value of being a quote unquote like good Hindu or good Ismaili. Like I don't want to like reify these concepts. I think it matters more of what you value in your faith and why you want to pass those things down to them. And maybe it is helpful and worthwhile to think of why it's important to you to pass down the things that are important to you about your faith and not be preoccupied with whether whatever child you raise with your faith is going to be a good Ismaili or a good Hindu. Just that you have inculcated and passed down values that were meaningful and valuable to you.
Yeah, I really like that message. Could you clarify what it means, what you meant by not focusing on being a quote-unquote good Hindu or good Ismaili?
Yeah, so I think that was, maybe it's not worthwhile to worry about, like, will I raise a kid that goes to Jamaka 2 times a day and prays 3 times a day and does, like, all of, like, practices all of these rituals or follows, like, a certain script of being someone who practices this religion perfectly, but more so that you raise your child to value the things or to see the value in the things that you value growing up.
Great. Thank you so much. We have one more segment.
We are going to do a rapid fire. We're going to ask you 12 questions. You'll have 90 seconds to answer them.
And go.
What's your favorite form of potato?
Roasted sweet potatoes.
Favorite holiday?
Thanksgiving.
What's something you should do but probably won't get around to?
Maybe read like War and Peace or something like that.
What is your go-to order at your favorite restaurant?
I like the veggie dumplings and the mustard greens at Umami and bean curd cheese at Mulan in Cambridge.
If you were an inanimate object, what would you be?
A water bottle, probably.
Window or aisle?
Oh, window for sure. I see no arguments for aisle.
If you were famous, what would you be famous for?
Remembering things, irrelevant details.
If you could raid one person's closet, whose would it be?
Probably Tan France, yeah.
You got through 7.
Oh, no.
So, at what age did you learn the most about yourself?
18.
What TV sitcom family would you be a member of?
30 Rock.
What compliment do you like receiving the most?
About my cooking.
What was the last book you read?
Thanks for the feedback.
Great. Well, thank you so much for participating. It was so much fun having you on today.
Thank you for listening. Hope you learned something. Hope you enjoyed the episode. It really was so incredible to see how involved in each other's religion and life her parents were and how open they were to each other's cultures, celebrations, faiths. Specifically how she said her father can complete the dua if it's being said around him, which I think is so cool that it has stuck with him. He has heard it so many times that he knows this like integral piece of our religion. That was really cool to me.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just such an interesting story because like she said, she didn't really know anyone that had a similar background in India. Like I feel like what they did was so rare in India and that's so cool, and they were just so ahead of their time, her parents. Like the fact that they didn't even have a religious ceremony, they literally signed some papers. They didn't do Hindu, they didn't do Muslim, they just got married.
In general, I think this series of interfaith, first with Armina and now with Raisa, has been so enlightening, but obviously there's so many nuances that we weren't able to capture in these stories that we highlighted, but hopefully it gave everyone a glimpse and it helped you think of something that you may not have thought of before. We look forward to seeing you back here next week. Thank you for your support, and please send in any questions you have, any feedback, and if you have a story of your own that you like to share on this podcast, please reach out to us on Instagram or email us. We would love, love to talk to you. Thank you so much and have a great week.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.